Lord. Now we see that Elijah prepares us for the day of the Lord. Elijah prepares us for the day of the Lord. He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Who is Elijah? Well, first of all, it was John the Baptist. So from this time period, at about 430 B.C., he's talking about the first coming of Christ and that there would be an Elijah that prepared the way for that. We know that that is a reference. Just looking at it, it would appear from our vantage point today, you know, some 2,400 years after the writing of this book, oh, well, he's just talking about the end time before the great and terrible, a great and dreadful day of the eternal. But Christ himself in Matthew 11, verses 10 and 14, said that this referred to John the Baptist, that John the Baptist would prepare the way, and that he would come in the spirit and power of Elijah is stated in Luke 1, verse 17. In spirit and the power of Elijah, Luke 1, verse 17. So John the Baptist was the Elijah. Another Elijah that we can see, and we might go to Matthew 17, verse 11. He talks about the vision, talking here with Peter, James, and John, the transfiguration, where he sees Moses and Elijah, or they see Moses and Elijah in this vision. Christ in verse 7 says, "Arise, be not afraid." They lifted up their eyes, they saw no man except for Jesus. And it had been so real, they just, you know, they couldn't imagine what was happening. They came down from the mountain. Jesus charged him, saying, "Tell the vision," very obvious that it was a vision by his statement, "to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead." His disciples asked him, saying, "Why then say the scribes that Elijah must first come?" I mean, what did it mean? They knew the prophecy that Elijah must first come. Jesus answered and said unto them, "Elijah truly shall first come and restore all things." Now, this is after John the Baptist. So he's not talking about John the Baptist here. He's talking about Elijah that shall come. He had, and we go back over to chapter 10, so we make sure that we see in black and white what he's saying. Chapter 11. He's talking about John here. "What do you see? A prophet? Yea, I say unto you," verse 9, "more than a prophet. This is written of him, this is he of whom it is written, 'Behold, I send my messenger before your face that shall prepare the way for you.'" And he talks about John the Baptist, how great he is. "All the prophets in law prophesied until John. If you will receive it, this is Elijah which was to come." So he says, if you can understand it, this was the Elijah to come. John was that Elijah. Now we go to Matthew 17, and he's saying there's an Elijah that shall come. That Elijah we see is a church, the responsibilities of the church. Now, can it also, since Elijah before was an individual, can it be an Elijah that is the head of the church at that time that is the one right before the return of Christ? You know, I would say that's speculative. I'd say where our problems have been in the past is by stating very strongly that Elijah represented Mr. Armstrong. And at that particular time when that was taught, it was felt, you know, it's kind of one of these statements that gets made, not meaning that Mr. Armstrong could never die. I never heard Mr. Armstrong say that he could not die. He just figured he would not die. And that Christ was going to return before he would die. And that, you know, this is what God had in mind. But when we start putting names to specific individuals, then we create problems for ourselves. So it's much more comforting. I mean, it is the whole church's responsibility. Who the head is at that particular time is a very responsible man, individual. I mean, very important job. Let's not demean that at all. But it's quite different from the work of John the Baptist. John the Baptist was one man going through the wilderness, preaching, proclaiming, and he went and picked up a few as he went along and had some few disciples that traveled with him. But a much different work he had in preparing the way for Jesus Christ's first coming than for the second. I don't see any one man who's then going to be going through the land, who's going to be proclaiming. But I see it as the work of the church, as Christ himself said that he would build a church, he would be with it. Matthew 16, Matthew 18, Matthew chapter 28, that his power would be with them. Acts chapter 1, I mean, on and on in time again, he pointed out the fact that the organization that would be doing the work would not just be one man, but it would be the church, a nation of priests, 1 Peter chapter 2, and those responsibilities. Okay. We are then back to verse 6 of Malachi chapter 4. He's saying here that there was an estrangement that was taking place in Judah, that there was a generation gap due to broken marriages and family. Chapter 2, verses 14 through 17, we already read last time, 14 through 16, I guess it was, that the covenant of marriage was being broken, that violence was being done to that. Also, there was damage here we see to children, that fathers weren't concerned for children, and children weren't respectful to their parents. One thing that we tend to point out with this verse, for families, for those fathers who have difficulties with their children and working things out and whatever, responsibility should be, first of all, on the father to try to work things out. It doesn't always work out, because some kids are so rebellious they don't want to listen, and you can do all you can do. You can't, you know, just give them everything. That's not going to solve the problem. We're talking sometimes about tough love in trying to resolve problems. But it is the father's responsibility to try to work things out, first of all. What happens if you have a father that's not interested, though, in resolving difficulties? Then who is the responsibility upon? I'd say the responsibility is upon the converted individual, the person who wants the relationship. And that God holds that person responsible for trying to build the relationship. Now, I say that, and I do know that there are some physical impossibilities on this earth at this time for relationships. I mean, there's just been too much that's gone on. I've had situations of kids with abuse that the abuse has been so great until the father truly repents, makes some changes, the child had better stay away. Then if there is adequate change and whatever, yeah, maybe they can get that back together. So, you know, when I say that, I don't want to leave it from the aspect that anyone would think, okay, well, I've got to go, you know, risk my life in order to build a relationship. No, there are some aspects, unfortunately, in this world that you really can't get beyond certain boundaries. I don't feel that most of us fall into that, however. You know, we can do something about those relationships and we're responsible for them. Okay, and that's the Minor Prophets. What do you need to know for the test? Everything between Hosea and Malachi. And what can go wrong? Some of the questions that I'll ask you. The first section is match the following kings to their empires and actions. I think we've already had most of these questions on the test before. Yeah, there's a few, you know, if they took an empire, that's probably going to be in there. If they were there during a particularly momentous period of time when something, perhaps a temple was rebuilt, that might be important to know those. Again, it's those that we've emphasized time and again. I don't expect you to know all the kings of Israel and Judah. We have basically worked, you know, off the top of my head, we've worked with Jeroboam, an evil king of Israel, Josiah, a good king of Judah. Hezekiah, a good king of Judah. Anytime you say good king, you know it has to be Judah. Okay, now not always evil king is Israel, because sometimes evil kings are Judah also. But those are probably the three most mentioned in this particular class that I can remember. Ahaz we've referred to maybe a couple of times. But then, you know, there are some major men of Assyria from, the Shalmaneser and Sargon, Sennacherib's an important historical figure. Then you have some major kings of Babylon. Trying to do these off the top of my head, they're probably all in here anyway. But you have some major kings of Babylon. You know who was the first king of Babylon at the time of the destruction of Israel? Nabopolassar. And of course, his son who took Judah, Nebuchadnezzar. And then, of course, you have some major figures at the time of Cyrus. So I think if you know those, you'll be in good shape. Then match the following names and meanings. These basically are the, you know, the 12 that we had. Know the meanings of those names and what they stand for. Jonah, for instance, you know what that represents. So know those, and you'll be in great shape. And basically, a lot of times the theme, right? If you know the name of the prophet and what it means, and you know the theme of the book you wrote, you're going to be in good shape. Because then a lot of the questions in true false, I think you go back and you can tie that in. But if you don't know those, then you're going to be kind of groping here and there. Okay? You're going to be groping a lot. Then it's match the following prophet to the description of the prophet. You know, what was a prophet and whatever. I think those become self-explanatory if you know what the theme of the book was and that. It's all Scantron. We will provide the Scantron sheets. Please bring pencils. But it's all Scantron. So, I mean, you don't have to come up with the name. You just have to know. If you know basically what happened in each of the books, I think that's going to keep you in good shape. The content to the appropriate book. For instance, swords into plowshares. Swords being turned into plowshares. What book is that in? Micah. That's probably the answer to that question. Yeah, that's one of the answers. I don't have the key here in front of me, so I'm sure that that's what we put as answer. Then we have match the event and the date. Okay, dates. What are important dates? Well, you know, I've just been going through with these kings with you. There are certain important dates. The fall of Israel is important. The fall of Judah is important. The fall of Nineveh is important. The fall of Babylon is important. The fall of all these empires is important because that sets up the next empire, right? So if you, you know, you kind of get those straight in your mind, make sure you know the main king who was ruling at the time that each of those empires fell, and then you'll be in good shape. And if you basically know when the prophets, you know, we talk about the Assyrian time period, the Babylonian time period, and the post-exilic. Know some of those dates in the post-exilic that they came back from the exile in 538 at the behest of Cyrus, and they rebuilt the temple. You'll want to know when the temple was rebuilt. You know, some basic dates there. The proclamation of Haggai and Zechariah as to when it ought to be rebuilt is self-explanatory. And then there were a few dates that we gave as far as when Ezra came and Nehemiah came. Then we have matching scriptures, and I think I went through those with you already. What were the, you know, how many from each book, right? Except for Malachi. Okay. Malachi, we have three. And those you probably already knew before you even came into the classroom. You know, the ones mentioned time and time again. Will a man rob God? Yes. You know, these that you've heard time and again. Okay, then place the minor prophets in the period in which they were written. You know where to put those in what section. And then we have, starting with question 101, 37. The minor prophet to the period that they were written. You know, we've had the Assyrian, Babylonian, and post-exilic. You know, if you memorize the 12 and can break them into 6, 3, and 3, I think we've already, I hope that we've gotten that much across. I mean, that's how I have to do it. You know, when I stop to think of, okay, which was where, I mean, some of them, that you know, come right like that because, you know, Haggai and Zechariah, boom, you know that was written 520, so, you know, that gets pretty easy. But some of the others, I have to go back, Hosea, Joel, and so. Yeah, that's in the Assyrian time period, you know. So, you know, if you're as crippled as I am mentally, then you may have to go back to that too. 101 through 137, then our true-false. Big thing with true-false, either it's all true or it's false. And as soon as I say we don't try to be tricky, then you'll find one that's really tricky. I mean, it's, if you know the material and go through it, you know what's wrong with a true false. The problem is if you don't know the material and you get to one and, well, it kind of sounds true to me, you know, which part of this is right and wrong and whatever, you just have to know the material to be able to do that. And each, what you do with true false is you look at each fact that's given to see if that fact is correct. If he said in a book, chapter, verse, then you think, okay, is that the book and is that the chapter and the verse? Okay, if you know what that says, you go next. Now, I don't think we did chapter and verse with any of these, did we? Lest I scare you to death. Yeah, okay, we're quoting. If we quote a scripture and we say that with it, we're not, you know, we're not lying about that's what the scripture said, okay? We're giving you the quote just because we know that that will bring to mind all the context of those verses. Right, Angela? What can go wrong? Multiple choice then, and that's easy enough because you just guess at whichever one of the four looks right. Match the following cities to their countries. And these are the big names that appear in the book. These, we didn't try to pull a name out of some obscure place to get you with. Match the following subjects to their books. I think we had one similar to that earlier. Another five or six questions or eight questions, true, false. Complete the eschatological chart. Hint, hint. Okay. And that's just like it was before. I think we may have changed it up some. Maybe we added a couple questions, whatever. So go over that so hopefully, my goal in this class is that you have an overview and some depth as far as each book and what it does and how it fits within this broad scale, but that you have a much better understanding of what happens at the end time as well as what has taken place, you know, in history. So, Roger. 200. An easy final because of Scantron. But it is 200 questions. I would encourage you to be on time. If you figure that up with the amount of time you have to take it, it's roughly 30 seconds for a question. And a lot of these things, you know, some of the sections you'll buzz through in 2 minutes because, you know, if you knew five of them, you guess at the other one or two, and then you're through and then you're right on. So half a minute, 30 seconds to a question, I think you can do that. Okay, so what you're saying is it was really Russ's fault that it took that long. Okay, so you need to save an extra minute at the end for that. Is that what you're saying? When is this test? At what time? Is there a test after it? Well, you know, you can take as much time as you want then. I mean, I'm not going to kick you out at 4. You got, you know, that's at least 2 hours, 120 minutes. Gassy, that gives you 40 seconds a question. You go to sleep if you spend any more time than that on a question. Anything else? Okay, I've enjoyed it. We'll see you for the final.